the airplane, farm equipment, truck, car, machine, or bike brands that you serviced, maintained, or repaired. Building, construction, electrical, and plumbing. 34. If you ever worked in those fields, were there any major projects you worked on? How much did the projects cost? For example, reception refurbishment, ABC Bank, Auckland Central Head Office, $1.2 million. General. 35. How long have you spent within any industry? For example, 12 years experience within the fashion industry. 36. Were you promoted in any of your roles? If so, in what years and to which roles? 37. Was extra authority awarded to you after a period of time within a role? For example, commenced as receptionist, then after 3 months awarded by being given further clerical responsibilities, including data entry and accounts payable. It is not necessary that these responsibilities awarded to you should have changed your job title and or salary. 38. Have you been asked to take part in or lead any trainee management courses or management development programs? 39. Were you asked to get involved in any special projects outside your job description? Or did you ever volunteer for such? What was the result? Positive feedback. 40. Have you ever received any written or verbal client, customer, or managerial commendations or letters of praise? 41. Can you think of any occasions where you gave excellent customer service? If so, how did you know the customer was satisfied? Also, what was the outcome? How did it benefit the company? 42. Did you receive any awards within your company or industry? For example, acknowledged for support or service of clients or staff, etc. Memberships. 43. Have you been a representative on any committees? For example, Health and Safety Committee. Any special responsibilities there? 44. Do you belong or have you belonged to any professional clubs, such as Toastmasters, Lions, or Rotary? Published or presented work. 45. Have you had any articles, papers, or features published in any magazines, journals, or books? If so, what publications and when? Have you written any books? 46. Have you presented any topics at any conferences or completed any public speaking? If so, what subjects have you talked about and how large was the audience? List in detail. Looking ahead. 47. What value do you think you would add to a potential employer's business? How would you be a resource or even a resource broker for them rather than just a job beggar? What kind of problems are you good at solving? 48. How do you think you would stand out compared to other applicants who have about the same qualifications as you have? That should give you a good start. Modify the list any way you want to. Add items and questions to it, change the wording, whatever. If you need additional guidance, search Google for the topic Keywords on an Electronic Resume, or Examples of Resumes, or How to Write a Resume, or Tips on Writing a Resume. This will turn up not only free resources and advice on the internet and for-fee resources, such as professional resume writers, but also the names of books if you want to get very thorough. Oh, and speaking of books, a supplement to this chapter is found in my little What Color Is Your Parachute? Guide to Rethinking Resumes, 10 Speed Press, 2014. As for what is the proper form for a resume, there are no rules. The only question is there a particular place or kind of place where you'd like to work? And if so, will the person there who has the power to hire you for the kind of job you want be persuaded by your resume to invite you in? If the answer is yes, then it matters not what form your resume takes. To illustrate my point, I used to have a hobby of collecting winning resumes, that is, resumes that had actually gotten someone an interview and ultimately a job. Being playful by nature, I would show these without comment to employer friends of mine over lunch. Many of them didn't like these winning resumes at all. "That resume will never get anyone a job," they would say. Then I would reply, "Sorry, you're wrong. It already has. I think what you mean is that it wouldn't get them a job with you." Here is a good example of what I mean. It's dated, but it's still my favorite. After his name, address, and phone number, E.J. Dyer added a quote, "I speak the language of men, machinery, and management," plus a picture of himself standing next to the chassis of one of the earliest cars. You'll find his complete resume in the PDF files included with this audiobook. Like the employer who hired him, I loved this resume. Yet some of the employers I showed it to, over lunch as I said, criticized it for using a picture, or for being too long, or for being too short, etc. In other words, had Mr. Dyer sent that resume to them, they wouldn't have invited him in for an interview. The brutal truth is, no matter how skillfully you write and post your resume, some employers will like it, some won't. Trouble is, if you're interested in some employer, you don't know which category they fit into. That's why many job hunters, if they use resumes, pray as they post their resume. Please, dear God, let them be employers who like resumes in general, and may the form of my resume appeal to those employers I care about in particular. Whatever form you decide on, write the resume and then post it everywhere you can online. On the omnibus job boards, famous job boards, community bulletin boards, and niche sites. For lists of such sites, go to the Live Career website, which you can find at www.livecareer.com/career/advice/jobs/INDRES. Incidentally, if this all seems like just too much trouble, there are resume distribution services that will do this blanket posting for you if you wish, sometimes without a fee, but most often for fees ranging from $50 to $100. See www.forwardyourresume.com for very useful evaluations of the top 10 such services. Whether it will pay you or not to use one of these services is, in my opinion, largely a matter of luck. Blind, dumb luck. Personally, I'd always try to do this myself before giving money to anyone else. If you decide to do this for yourself, my advice is, post it right on the actual website of companies that interest you, if they have a site, and if their site permits that. This, of course, assumes you have figured out where you would most like to work, if they'll have you. In this post-2008 period, I recommend you pay particular attention to small employers. First, try those with 25 or less employees, then 50 or less, and then 100 or less. Also, you're likely to have better luck with newer organizations, 7 years old or less. If you post your resume on the sites of particular employers, large or small, don't count on any acknowledgement or reply. Just post the thing, cross your fingers, and pray it arrives at the right time, at the right place, into the hands of the right person, the one who actually has the power to hire you. Sad truth, many employers don't even look at the resumes posted on their site. Alternatives to the classic resume. A cover letter was, for decades, something you sent along with your resume. Now, many employers prefer a cover letter instead of your resume. That brief cover letter can summarize all that a longer resume might have covered. I get this kind of report all the time from successful job hunters. Cover letter. Make it personal and specific to that job. I was directly told in two interviews that my unique cover letter got me in the door. I researched the companies. If you don't know what a cover letter is or how to write it, the internet can rescue you handily. Look especially for Susan Ireland's cover letter guide at http://susanireland.com/letter/how-2. It's good, and it's free. You can also consult the cover letter chapter in my little book, What Color is Your Parachute? Guide to Rethinking Resumes, 10 Speed Press, 2014. Another alternative to a classic resume is a job or career portfolio. A portfolio may be electronic, posted on the internet, or on paper, or in a notebook, or in a large display case, as with artists, demonstrating your accomplishments, experience, training, commendations, or awards from the past. Artists have a portfolio with samples of their work. You probably knew that, but portfolios are equally apt in other fields. Instead of portfolio, we might just call them evidence of what I can do and have done, or proof of performance. For guidance on how to prepare a job portfolio and what to include, simply type job or career portfolio into Google. You'll get a wealth of tips and information, such as www.livecareer.com/career/advice/jobs/job-search-portfolio. Some friendly reminders about your pre-Google resume. 1. If you're blanketing the internet with that resume, be cautious about including any stuff on the resume that would help someone find out where you live or work. Sad to say, there are some sick people out there. Sick in the head, that is. If I were you, I'd be sure to leave out my address and home phone number. Just an email address should more than suffice. 2. If you are targeting particular employers rather than or in addition to broad job sites, keep in mind that a resume is best not sent solely by email, particularly if it's an attachment and not embedded in the body of the email. Many employers, leery of viruses, will not even open email attachments, and that includes your resume. Send it by email if you must, but always send a nicer version of it by the Postal Service, or UPS, or FedEx, etc. 3. If you're going to snail mail a resume to a target employer, pay attention to the paper you write or print it on. Picture this scenario. An employer is going through a whole stack of resumes, and on average, he or she is giving each resume about 8 seconds of their time. True, we checked. Then that resume goes into either a pile we might call Forget It, or a pile we might call Bears Further Investigation. And what determines which pile it goes into? Surprise! It's the feel of the paper. Yes! That employer's first contact with your resume is with their fingers, assuming this is in a stack of printed resumes, not digital ones. By the pleasure or displeasure of their fingers as they first pick up your resume, they are prejudiced for or against you before they even start reading. Usually, they are blissfully unaware of this. Anyway, this is why you want the paper to feel good. That usually means using paper weighing at least 28 pounds. A paper's weight is on the outside of every package. And you want it to be easy to read, so be sure it's nicely laid out or formatted using a decent-sized font, size 12 or even 14, etc. 4. A resume should have a purpose, at least in your mind. It might be that you're posting it online just to collect and organize all pertinent information about yourself in one place, so that when an employer Googles you, they find this, nice and concise, in contrast to all the other stuff about you that Google will find scattered all over the internet. 5. Your sole purpose for your resume, if you're targeting individual employers, is to get yourself invited in for an interview. Period. This truth, unfortunately, is not widely known. Most job hunters, and more than a few resume writers, assume a resume's purpose is to sell you or secure you a job. It does happen, but primarily the purpose of a resume is just to get invited in for an interview, where it will then be time for you to sell yourself, in person, face to face, not on paper. So, once written, go back and read over every single sentence in your resume and evaluate it by this one standard. Will this item help to get me invited in? Or will this item seem too puzzling or off-putting or a red flag? If you doubt a particular sentence will help you get invited in for an interview, then omit that sentence. If it's important to you, give yourself a note to be sure to cover it in the interview. And if there is something you feel you will ultimately need to explain or expand upon, save that explanation also for the interview. Your resume is, above all, no place for true confessions. I kind of botched up at the end in that job. That's why they let me go, as I'm sure they'll tell you when you check my references. If you want the interviewer to know that in the interest of full disclosure, don't put it in your resume. Save true confessions for the end of the interview, and only if you're confident at that point that they really want you, and you really want them. 6. The same advice applies to discussing any non-visible or non-obvious handicap you may have. Generally speaking, there are exceptions. Don't mention it as early as the resume. And even when you're in the interview, don't discuss right off the bat what you can't do. Focus all their attention initially on what you can do, that you can perform all the tasks required in this job. Save what you can't do for the moment when they say they really want you. 7. If you're coming out of some subculture that has its own language, for example, the military, clergy, etc., get some help in translating your experience into the language of employers. For example, preached should be replaced by taught. Commanded should be replaced by supervised, etc. 8. Key words are important if you're posting your resume without specific employers in mind. A good article about keywords, what they are and how to insert them into your resume, can be found in Squawk Fox's article, 8 Keywords That Set Your Resume on Fire, at www.squawkfox.com/8-keywords-that-set-your-resume-on-fire. 9. Finally, don't include references on your resume. Some career counselors and resume writers will disagree with me on this, but I think references are better offered after prospective employers have had a chance to see and talk with you. And please, 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 never list somebody as a reference at any time in your job hunt without first getting their written permission to do so. Be aware that your references, if they are checked out, will often be checked out over the phone rather than in writing. But in case you may need something in writing, if your references permit you to use their name, ask them to give the letter of recommendation to you. You want to screen your references. Believe me, you do. Don't assume that they'll give you a raving recommendation. Some of your preferred reference writers may turn out to be people who are by nature brutally honest. If they've never actually seen you at work, for example, they may say so, and decline to say whether you'd be an asset or not. That kind of recommendation is honest, but it won't do you any good. You want to find this out before any prospective employer sees it. Then you can decide whether you want to use it or deep six it before you go into the interview. 10. Hard fact to learn, but you must learn it. Some employers hate resumes. Why should that be any surprise? Currently, according to experts, 82% of all resumes have to be checked out concerning the facts stated or the experience claimed. Lies are spreading like a plague on resumes. Another hard fact. Some employers love resumes. Unfortunately, it's not for the reasons you think. They love them because they offer an easy way to cut down the time they have to spend interviewing candidates for a vacancy. Don't forget this. For an employer, hiring is essentially an elimination game. Particularly where a lot of people are applying, they're reading over your resume looking for one thing, a reason, any reason, to eliminate you, so they can cut that stack of resumes down to a manageable number for face-to-face interviewing, say 3 to 8. Surveys show it only takes a skilled human resources person about 8 seconds to scan a resume, 30 seconds if they're really dawdling. So getting rid of 50 job hunters, I mean getting rid of 50 resumes, takes only half an hour or less. Whereas interviewing those 50 job hunters in person would have required a minimum of 25 hours. Great time savings for them. No wonder employers invented resumes. Where you post your resume makes a difference. Let's say that again. Where you post your resume makes all the difference in the world. Research has discovered that the number of face-to-face interviews that employers need to conduct before they find someone they want to hire stays pretty constant, around 5.4, once they've sifted through all the resumes or applications. So to conserve their energy, they instinctively ask themselves, where would I have to sift through the least number of resumes before I decide who to do those 5.4 interviews with? Fortunately, we know the answer. Somebody did a study. From an analysis released in April 2011 by Jobs to Web Incorporated of 1,300,000 job applications and 26,000 hires in 2010. If employers post their vacancy on a job board such as Monster.com, Indeed.com, or CareerBuilder.com, they typically have to look through 219 resumes from job hunters who respond before they find someone to interview and hire. If employers consider resumes from job hunters who come through social media sites, such as LinkedIn or Facebook, they typically have to look through 116 resumes before they find someone to interview and hire. If employers post their vacancy on their own website, they typically have to look through 33 resumes from job hunters who respond before they find someone to interview and hire. And if the job hunter takes the initiative to find a very specific job rather than waiting to find a vacancy, and does this, say, by typing the name of that kind of job into a search engine, then sending resumes to any companies whose name turns up, employers only have to look through 32 applications before they find someone to interview and hire. And if the job hunter takes even more initiative, chooses a company where they'd like to work, and gets a referral, that is, gets some employee within that company to recommend them, employers have to look through only 10 such candidates before they find someone to interview and hire. Summary. Okay, one more time. Since 2008, do you need a resume? Well, no you don't. And yes you do. You already have a kind of resume without lifting a finger if you've been posting anything on the internet. Google is your new resume. What an employer finds out about you simply by Googling your name helps determine whether you get hired or not. You've got to clean up what they'll find before they find it. Edit, fill in, expand, and add to it before they see it. But that alone is not enough. You need to summarize and organize the information about yourself in one place, online or off. And that means you need to write the old kind of resume that you did pre-2008. Once written, you can go two ways with it. The first way is just to post it everywhere on the internet, which is akin to nailing it to a tree in the town square where everyone can see it. You just post it as is. The second way is to send it to particular employers whom you have targeted, hoping that resume will get you an interview. Here, you will need to edit it before sending it to any employer. You will need to weigh every sentence in it by one criterion and one only. Will this help me get invited in for an interview at this place? If the answer is no, you must edit or remove that sentence. Because these are the most fundamental truths about approaching individual employers. The primary purpose of a resume is to get yourself invited in for an interview. The primary purpose of that interview is to get yourself invited back for a second interview. The primary purpose of the second and subsequent interviews there is to help them decide that they like you and want you once you've decided that you like them and could do some of your best work there. The 10 Greatest Mistakes Made in Job Interviews, whereby your chances of finding a job are greatly decreased. 1. Going after large organizations only, such as the Fortune 500. 2. Hunting all by yourself for places to visit. 3. Doing no homework on an organization before going there. 4. Allowing the Human Resources Department to interview you. Their primary function is to look for reasons to screen you out. 5. Setting no time limit when you first begin the interview and then overstaying your welcome. 6. Letting your resume be the only agenda discussed during the job interview. 7. Talking primarily about yourself throughout the interview and what benefit the job will be for you. 8. Failing to give examples of the skills you claim you have. 9. Basically approaching the employer as if you were a job beggar, hoping they will offer you any kind of a job, however humble. 10. Not sending a thank you note right after the interview. Chapter 8. 16 Tips About Interviewing for a Job. Now, hunting for one of those 10 million vacancies that are out there each month will inevitably involve interviewing, sooner or later. And the word interview strikes terror into the heart of many, if not most, job hunters. Well, it needn't. Interviews aren't just for a job. There are many types of interviews, so this topic shouldn't be intimidating. I can think of three kinds of interviews right off the bat that arise during a job hunt. They are distinguished from each other by what you are looking for, and more importantly, who you are talking to. 1. Interviews for fun or practice. Here, you are talking with people who are passionate about something that you are too, be it Hawaii, scrapbooks, travel, physical fitness, running, or whatever. Oh, you would just call these conversations? Okay then, conversations. 2. Interviews for information, where you are talking with employees who did or do the job you are exploring. Or maybe you're talking with information specialists or with experts in the industry that interest you. Oh, you would just call these conversations? Okay, then. Conversations. 3. Interviews for a job, where you are talking with employers, and most particularly with the person who actually has the power to hire you for the job you want, rather than an HR interviewer whose first job is to screen out as many candidates as possible. You want information. Oh, you wouldn't call these conversations. Well, I would. This chapter is going to be about this third kind of interview or conversation, the one for a job. Keep in mind that the interview may not be face-to-face. 75% of companies now report that they sometimes do video interviews, many via Skype. If you're not familiar with Skype, it's never too late to start. Load it onto your computer, test it by calling a friend. See how you come across. Get honest feedback, not just backstroking. Also, keep in mind that interview is usually plural. You are very likely to have a whole series of interviews at one particular place before they decide to hire you, and you decide you really want to work there, unless it's a small mom-and-pop kind of enterprise. In any event, there are 16 tips about the hiring conversations at one particular place that you would do well to keep in mind. Conversation tip number 1. There is no such thing as employers. I'm referring to the way job hunters use that word to reach conclusions after just 2 interviews at 2 different places. You conclude, employers just won't hire me, or someone with my background, or someone with my handicap, or nonsense like that. My friend, you are reaching way beyond the facts. Fact. You interviewed with 2 employers, or 6, or 12, and they wouldn't hire you. Those 2, those 6, or those 12. They hardly speak for all 28.8 million active businesses that are out there. Fact. Employers are individuals, as different from one another as night and day. Employers span a wide range of attitudes, wildly different ideas about how to hire, a wide range of ways to conduct hiring interviews, and as many different attitudes toward handicaps as you can possibly think of. You cannot possibly predict the attitude of one employer from the attitude of another. All generalizations about employers, including those in this book, are just mental conveniences. Fact. There are millions of separate, distinct, unrelated employers out there with very different requirements for hiring. Unless you look dirty, wild, and disreputable, and smell really bad, if you know what your talent is, I guarantee some employer is looking for you. Even if you're crazy, there's some employer crazier than you. You have to keep going. Some employers out there do want you, no matter what the others think. Your job is to find them. Fact. There is a big difference between large employers, those with hundreds or thousands of employees, and small employers, alternately defined as those with 25 or fewer employees, or as those with 50 or fewer employees, or, the most common definition, as those with 100 or fewer employees. The chief difference is that large employers are harder to reach, especially if the person who has the power to hire you for the job you want is in some deep inner chamber of that company, and the company's phone has a voice menu with 18 impenetrable layers. Don't think your interviewing experience with small employers will necessarily be at all like that. Fact. There is a big difference between new companies or enterprises and those that have been around for some time, so far as hiring is concerned. A recent study by the Bureau of Labor Statistics found that newer companies with fewer than 100 employees, which were less than 5 years old, created a net gain of 2.8 million jobs in 2017, while older, similar firms had a net loss of 1.4 million jobs. So when hiring is tight, you will want to concentrate on small firms and newer small firms at that. Don't think your interviewing experience with new companies will necessarily be at all like the rejection you had with old ones. Moral: don't get discouraged by your interview turndowns. Job expert Tom Jackson brilliantly described the outcomes of job interviews at a whole bunch of places as follows. No. No, no, no. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. Yes, yes. As Tom points out, every no you get out of the way gets you one step closer to yes, or preferably two yeses. Conversation tip number two. An interview, or series of interviews there, should be prepared for before you ever go in. Naturally, you want to go into the interviews with this employer curious to know more about you, but the employer is first of all curious about what you know about them. Do a lot of research on them before you go in. Why? Because organizations love to be loved. If you've gone to the trouble of finding out as much as you can about them before you interview with them, they will be flattered and impressed, believe me. So don't skip this step. It may make the difference between your being hired or not being hired. Find out everything you can about them. Google them. Go to their website if they have one. And read all their press releases, plus everything there that is hidden under the heading About Us. If this organization is local and your town has a public library, ask your local librarian for help in finding any news clippings or other information about the place. And finally, ask all your friends if they know anyone who ever worked there or works there still, so you can take them to lunch or tea or Starbucks and find out any inside stories before you approach the place. And, of course, maybe after you hear these stories, you'll decide not to explore them any further. Better to know that now than later. Conversation tip number three. Honor agreements. If it was you who asked for the interview, not them, remove their dread of this visit by specifying how much time you are asking of them. You are the one in control of how long the interview lasts. Specify some oddball period like 19 minutes. 20 sounds vague. 19 sounds precise, like you are really serious. If they grant you the interview, keep to this time limit as though your life depended on it. It builds trust. You mean what you say. You do what you say you're gonna do. If you have a cell phone with a timer that allows you to select vibrate without any sound, set its timer before you go into your appointment to 17 minutes. That leaves you 2 minutes to wrap up. But don't activate the timer yet. Wait for the time you actually are about to enter their office for the interview, then activate it by tapping it on or go. Keep the phone in a pocket or purse where you can feel it. At the 17-minute vibration warning, tap it off and prepare to end the interview by saying, "I said I would only take 19 minutes of your time, and I like to honor my agreements." This will usually make a huge impression on an employer. Don't obsess about time during the interview. Just stay quietly aware of it in the background of your mind as you focus sharply on what the employer is saying. And at the end, don't stay 1 minute longer than the 19 minutes, unless the employer begs you to, and I mean begs, begs, begs. A courteous interviewer will say, "Oh, do you have to?" But don't mistake that for anything other than what it is, courtesy. Just graciously go. Of course, if it was they who invited you in for the interview, then it is up to them as to how long the interview lasts. Conversation tip number four. An interview for a job is a lot like dating. I remind you of what I said in Chapter 2. The other human activity job hunting most resembles is dating, not marketing a used car. This conversation is two people attempting to decide if you both want to try to go steady, Or maybe it's you plus six or nine others, depending on how many from the employer's team are sitting in on the interview. It's got to be a two-way decision. What the employer decides is critical, of course, but so is what you decide. This interview is a data-collecting process for the employer. Whether one person or a team is interviewing you, they are using the interview to find out, do we like you? Do we want you to work here? Do you have the skills, knowledge, or experience that we really need? Do you have the work ethic that we are looking for? And how will you fit in with our other employees? All well and good, but this interview is part of your data collecting process too, the one you've been engaged in, or should have been engaged in throughout your whole job hunt. You are sitting there now with the employer or their team, and the question you are trying to find an answer to is, do I like you all? Do I want to work here or not? You don't begin an interview, as some so-called experts would have it, by marketing yourself. Not now, not in the beginning, not until you have gathered all the information you need to know about the place and are weighing the question, do I want to work here? And have concluded, yes, or I think so. Do you then turn your energy toward marketing yourself? Let me emphasize this. Your side of the conversation, or conversations, has two steps to it. First, gentle questioning about the place, then quiet, self-confident marketing of yourself, if, but only if, you've decided this is the place for you. Because there are two steps, you'll save yourself a lot of grief if you realize the first interview there has only one main purpose. To be invited back for a second interview. Conversation tip number 5. Questions to expect from them, then questions you can ask. The principal question, the first question, the most important question they are likely to ask you is, tell me about yourself. How you answer that question will determine your fate during the rest of the interview. So here are some key points to keep in mind about your answer to tell me about yourself. A. With this question, they are giving you a kind of test. They want to see how you respond to an open-ended, unstructured situation, the kind of unanticipated challenge that life and a job are continually presenting to each of us. B. Employers feel you have flunked the test if you respond with a question instead of any answer. Every job hunter's favorite response, well, what do you want to know about me, is every employer's least favorite. They interpret this to mean you have no idea what to answer and are stalling for time. C. What employers are looking for here is an answer to a somewhat different question than the one they posed. The unspoken real question the employer has is, what experience, skills, or knowledges do you have that are relevant to the job I'm trying to fill? That's what you should try to answer here, not your personal history, where you grew up, your tastes or hobbies. Employers want your work history. And more particularly, your work history as it relates to this job that you are discussing with them. D. Incidentally, it will help if you ask yourself, before going to the interviews, what are the 3 most important competencies for this job? If you haven't a clue, then that's what you want to ask them early on in the interviews. Then, of course, during the interviews, you will want to emphasize and demonstrate that you have those 3 for the job that you are applying for. E. But here, we're pondering your answer to, tell me about yourself. Employers expect you to have this answer at your fingertips, well summarized, well rehearsed. This is the famous elevator speech job coaches are always recommending to job hunters. In the length of time it takes to ride an elevator up a tall building, you should be able to give your entire answer to this question, rehearsed and rehearsed beforehand, until you could say it in your sleep. Okay. What other questions may you expect the employer to ask you during your interview there? Books on interviewing, of which there are many, often publish long lists of questions employers may ask you, along with some time-worn, semi-clever answers. Their lists include such questions as, tell me about yourself, as we've seen. What do you know about this company, business, or organization? Why are you applying for this job? How would you describe yourself? What are your major strengths? What is your greatest weakness? What type of work do you like to do best? What are your interests outside of work? What accomplishment thus far in your life gave you the greatest satisfaction? Why did you leave your last place of work? Or why were you fired, if you were? Where do you see yourself 5 years from now? What are your goals in life? How much did you make at your last job? And their lists go on. But really, there are only five basic questions that you need to pay attention to. The people who have the power to hire you are most curious about your answers to these five, which they may ask directly or try to find out without even mentioning the questions per se. 1. Why are you here? This means, why are you knocking on my door rather than someone else's door? 2. What can you do for us? This means, if we were to hire you, will you help me with the challenges I face? What are your skills, and how much do you know about the subject or field that our organization is in? 3. What kind of person are you? This means, will you fit in? Do you have the kind of personality that makes it easy for people to work with you? And do you share the values that we have at this place? 4. What exactly distinguishes you from 19 or 900 other people who are applying for this job? This means, do you have better work habits than the others? Do you show up earlier, stay later, work more thoroughly, work faster, maintain higher standards, go the extra mile, or what? 5. Can I afford you? This means, if we decide we want you here, how much will it take to get you, and are we willing and able to pay that amount, governed as we are by our budget, and by our inability to pay you as much as the person who would be next above you on our organizational chart? These are the principal questions that employers want to know the answers to. This is the case, as I said, even if the interview begins and ends with these five questions, never once being mentioned explicitly by the employer. Nonetheless, these questions are still floating beneath the surface of the conversation, beneath all the things being discussed. So anything you can do during the interviews there to help the employer with these five curiosities will make you stand out in the employer's mind. Of course, it's not just the employer who has questions. This is a two-way conversation, remember? You have questions too. And, no surprise, they are the same questions as the employer's, in only slightly different form. Here's what you are probably quietly thinking about during your half of the conversation. 1. What does this job involve? You want to understand exactly what tasks will be asked of you so that you can determine if these are the kinds of tasks you would really like to do and can do. 2. What are the skills a top employee in this job would have to have? You want to find out if your skills match those that the employer thinks a top employee in this job has to have in order to do this job well. 3. Are these the kind of people I would like to work with or not? Do not ignore your intuition if it tells you that you would not be comfortable working with these people. You want to know if they have the kind of personalities that would enable you to accomplish your best work. If these people aren't it, keep looking. 4. If we like each other and we both want to work together, Can I persuade them there's something unique about me that makes me different from 19 or 900 other people who are applying for this job? You need to think out way ahead of time. What does make you different from other people who can do the same job? For example, if you are good at analyzing problems, how do you do that? 1. Painstakingly. 2. Intuitively in a flash. Or 3. By consulting with greater authorities in the field. You see the point. You are trying to put your finger on the style or manner in which you do your work. That is distinctive and hopefully appealing to this employer so that they choose you over other people they are interviewing. These are called your self-management skills, as we saw in Chapter 5. 5. Can I persuade them to hire me at the salary I need or want? This requires some knowledge on your part of how to conduct salary negotiation. Key things to know. It should always take place at the end of the interviews there, and whoever mentions a salary figure first generally loses in the negotiation. That's covered in the next chapter. You will probably want to ask questions 1 and 2 out loud. You should observe quietly the answer to question 3. You will be prepared to make the case for questions 4 and 5 when the appropriate time in the interview arises. Further questions you may want to ask: what significant changes has this company gone through in the past 5 years? What values are sacred to this company? What characterizes the most successful employees this company has? What future changes do you see in the work here? Who do you see as your allies, colleagues, or competitors in this business? How do you first raise these questions of yours if you initiated the interview? Well, you might begin by reporting just exactly how you've been conducting your job hunt and what impressed you so much about this organization during your research that you decided to come in and talk to them about a job. From there, and thereafter, you can fix your attention on the 5 questions that are inevitably on the employer's mind. Incidentally, these 5 questions pop up yet again if you're there to talk not about a job that already exists, but rather a job that you hope they will create for you. In that case, these 5 questions change form only slightly. They get changed into 5 statements that you make to the person who has the power to create this job. 1. You tell them what you like about this organization. 2. You tell them what sorts of needs you find intriguing in this field in general and in this organization in particular. By the way, unless you first hear the word coming out of their mouth, don't use the word problems, as most employers prefer synonyms that sound gentler to their ears, such as challenges or needs. 3. You tell them what skills seem to you to be necessary in order to meet such needs, and you give them brief stories from your past experience that demonstrate you have those very skills. Employers, in these days of behavioral interviews, are not impressed with vague statements like, "I'm good at." They want concrete examples from your past experience that prove you have the transferable skills, special knowledges skills, or self-management skills, i.e., traits, that you are claiming to have. 4. You tell them what is unique about the way you perform these skills. Every prospective employer wants to know what makes you different from 19 or 900 other people who can do the same kind of work as you. You have to know what that is, and then not merely talk about it, but actually demonstrate it by the way you conduct your side of the hiring interview. 5. And you tell them how the hiring of you will not cost them in the long run. You need to be prepared to demonstrate that you will, in the long run, bring in more money than the salary they pay you. Emphasize this. Conversation tip number 6. During the interviews, determine to observe the 50-50 rule. Studies have revealed that, in general, The people who get hired are those who mix speaking and listening 50-50 in the interviews. That is, half the time they let the employer do the talking, half the time in the interviews they do the talking. People who didn't follow that mix were the ones who didn't get hired, according to the study. My hunch as to the reason why this is so is that if you talk too much about yourself, you come across as one who would ignore the needs of the organization. If you talk too little, you come across as trying to hide something about your background. Conversation tip number 7. In answering the employer's questions, observe the 20-second to 2-minute rule. Studies have revealed that when it is your turn to speak or answer a question, you should plan not to speak any longer than 2 minutes at a time, if you want to make the best impression. In fact, a good answer to an employer's question sometimes only takes 20 seconds to give, but not less than that, else you will be assumed to be a grunter, lacking any communication skills. Conversation tip number 8. The employer is primarily concerned about risk. As I mentioned earlier, employers hate risks. One risk stands above all the others, that they may hire you, but you won't work out, in which case you are going to cost the employer a lot of money. Put the search term cost of a bad hire into your favorite internet search engine, Google, and see what it turns up. As you can see, the cost of hiring the wrong person can cost the employer 1 to 5 times the bad hire's annual salary or more. So during the interview, you may think you are sitting there scared to death, while the employer, individual or team, is sitting there blasé and confident. But in actual fact, you and they may both be quite anxious. The employer's anxieties include any or all of the following. A. That if hired, you won't be able to do the job, that you lack the necessary skills or experience, and the hiring interview didn't uncover this. B. That if hired, you won't put in a full working day, more often than not. C. That if hired, you'll take frequent sick days on one pretext or another. D. That if hired, you'll only stay around for a few weeks, or at most a few months, until you find a better job. E. That if hired, it may take you too long to master the job, and thus it will be too long before you turn a profit for that organization. F. That you won't get along with the other workers there, or that you will develop a personality conflict with the boss. G. That you will only do the minimum that you can get away with, rather than the maximum that the boss was hoping for. Since every boss these days is trying to keep their workforce smaller than it was before 2008, they are hoping for the maximum productivity from each new hire post-2008. H. That you will always have to be told what to do next, rather than displaying initiative. I. That you will turn out to have a disastrous character flaw not evident in the interview, and ultimately reveal yourself to be either dishonest or irresponsible, a spreader of dissension at work, lazy, an embezzler, a gossip, a sexual harasser, a drunk, a drug user or substance abuser, a liar, incompetent, or to put it bluntly, an employer's worst nightmare. J. If this is a large organization and your would-be boss is not the top person there, that you will bring discredit upon them and upon their department or section or division, etc., for ever hiring you in the first place, making them lose face, possibly also costing them a raise or a promotion from the boss upstairs. In the end, what employers want to hire are people who can bring in more money than they are paid. Every organization has 2 main preoccupations for its day-by-day work. The problems, they generally prefer challenges, they are facing, and what solutions to those challenges their employees and management are coming up with. Therefore, the main thing the employer is trying to figure out during the hiring interview with you is, will you be part of the solution there, or just another part of the problem? In trying to allay their worries here, you should figure out